Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from Metron in beautiful historic Atlanta. Metron people, give the podcast people a big welcome. And podcast people, thank you for your feedback. It really means a lot. It really means a lot to Charles, means a lot to me. So thank you for being in the 21st century and being a part of the podcast generation. This isn't technically a podcast as most of them are, like with they do interviews and that sort of thing. At some point, I may do that. We should do a podcast together. We got to figure out. The one I did, I don't know if you heard the one I did with John Scott, but those of you that are listening, I'm talking to Robert Rutherford. The one I did with John Scott the other day, I thought Rutherford and I should do one of these where we can just do it through FaceTime, and it would be logistically a lot easier, and it seemed to work out fine. So let's talk about that. But I do want to, I'll call it a series, and I'll give it a title, and the title is Meditation in the Mind of Christ. I think I've used this title before, but I want to go back in and use this part of it again. Meditation in the Mind of Christ, Healing the Subconscious and Living as Spirits in the Material World. I do want to show you a scripture. It's out of the Psalms. It's out of Psalm 19. And you know, David was a very creative type. He didn't write all the Psalms. He wrote most of them. He was an artist. He was a musician. What we have is the Psalms are actually the lyrics to songs that he wrote. If he were living today, he would probably be diagnosed as bipolar. What they used to call manic depressive. He had super high highs and super low lows. Jeremiah definitely was like that. Jeremiah nearly sounds schizophrenic when you really dissect his words. I mean, the people who wrote the Bible are people. I mean, I'm not saying it's not inspired, but there are people who had issues, and their revelation was filtered through their worldview. Paul's was. Paul had a great revelation of the post-resurrected Jesus, but it was filtered through his own prejudices, and you can see how he had to evolve in his attitude toward women and all sorts of things. And that's why the scriptures have to be rightly divided. But one thing about David, if you're ever mad at somebody and you want something really bad to happen to him, go to the Psalms, read the Psalms, because David was big into vengeance. You know, like, do not I hate them with perfect hatred, and break out their teeth, O God, and I hate, you know, may just terrible things. And then at the end of the song, he would retract it, and he'd say, okay, create me a clean heart, renew a right spirit within me. But that's a very human thing that we've all experienced. You know, and when we get back into our right minds, we think, no, I don't want a terrible thing to happen to him. I just want him to go away. Maybe kind of terrible. But I posted a quote this week I think is really true. It says, when you want something bad to happen to somebody who hurt you and you're really preoccupied with that, you're actually letting them hurt you twice because now you're so obsessed with them. And I thought, I'm not saying it as elegantly as the person said it, but you get the point. Anyway, David said something that I think is something we can all relate to, and it's in Psalm 19, verse 12. This is in the Amplified Classic. He says, who can discern his lapses and errors? Clear me from hidden and unconscious faults. King James says, keep me back from secret sins and presumptuous sins or secret faults. And what I think is interesting about this, I'm not teaching this to try to get us to live in a sinless way that pleases God, because I don't even think that way anymore. I believe that we're perfect. I believe God never was mad at us. I believe the reason Jesus came to die on the cross is because people who came out of a blood sacrifice background needed a touchstone to feel righteous. And so he was touched with the feelings of our infirmities. And that's why he was wounded for our transgressions and bruised for our iniquities, not for God, but for us, so that we could identify with it. God speaks to Adam and he says, who told you were naked? He could just as easily have said, who told you were fallen? The fall was our perception of being alienated from God. In the New Testament, Paul said you were alienated from God in your minds, not in reality, but in your minds. And the problem with most religion is it keeps people in a state of alienation consciousness. It's the idea that if I just go to church enough, if I sing in the choir enough, if I say enough Hail Marys, if I do enough mea culpas, if I do all this kind of stuff. And Paul had a revelation in 1 Corinthians 13 where he says, look, if I even give my body to be burned and sell everything I have and give it to the poor, if it's not love motivated, it's pointless anyway. And that's a real expose on the ineffective, impotent ability of religion to make us right with God, because we already are right with God. I was able, at Chandra's mother's service this week, I said, look, I don't want to argue with y'all about hell and all that kind of stuff, but I can just tell you this, we all came out of God and we're all going to end up back in God. I don't know all the details of how that works out. Don't ask me about Hitler and Gaddafi, you know, like I don't have all the answers to that. I just know that there is something even higher than our concept of God, and that's love. And John, the Apostle John, tapped into that. You know, he said, let that abide in you which you heard from the beginning. And it was in that context, he was talking about love. Paul came along in Romans 7, and he was very conflicted. Remember when he said, the things I would do if I myself not doing, the things I would not do if I myself do. And that it's within that context that he says, who will deliver me from the bondage of this death? I thank God that he will. And then he goes into chapter 8 saying, there is therefore now no condemnation. So he was struggling with his own sin consciousness. What David is saying here, David kind of didn't have a lot of sin consciousness. He could beat up on himself a little bit, but David was kind of, he was very comfortable with sexuality. You couldn't shame him that much. Remember when he's out, you know, he kind of stripped down and danced in front of the women, and when the Ark of the Covenant came back into Jerusalem, and his wife, Michal, looked out of the window and saw it, and she said, I know what you were doing. And the thing is, that probably was what he was doing. I mean, David, you know, liked the ladies. And, you know, she said that you brought, huh? Well, yeah. I don't think David was gay, but he definitely had, I think Jonathan was. And they had a relationship. I mean, I'm not just being dirty, but it says when they, I loved you more than women. They undressed when they met each other. I mean, come on. Fried green tomatoes. Jonathan. It's not rocket science. It was funny. Wednesday, Thursday, we were running the Peachtree. You know, they've got bands and DJs set up all along so that you're hearing music the whole time. And they play YMCA a lot. And it's so funny because everybody sings YMCA. You see, like, these big cops are out there and all these, like, real butch, totally straight guys. And they're all doing YMCA. Y'all, you know, what? The Village People were gay? A little bit. little bit. It's just funny what people choose to see and not see, but that's a different teaching. Anyway, what I like about this, when Michal saw that, David didn't retract it. He said, oh well, next time I'll just take everything off and dance. Like if you follow the narrative of the story, Michal is the one that gets stricken with barrenness. It's not like God backs up her judgmentalism, you know. And David, as he's dying, this sounds like somebody I'm related to, but, you know, as he's dying, he says, you know, he's I'm an old man, I'm chilly, I need a young, nubile woman to sleep in the bed with me to warm me up. I mean, can you believe he actually sold somebody on that idea? You're like, really? You couldn't get a dog, you couldn't get a heating blanket, a hot water bottle, we couldn't just turn up the heat? Like, nah, I need a chickie. And he just, you know, believe me, I know people that were like that to their deathbed, and you kept waiting for them to say, I regret everything I've done. They're like, no, I enjoyed every bit of it. Like, okay, you know, that's between you and God. I can tell you this, it's a waste of time to judge other people. You might as well just, you follow your own conscience and let other people work out their own salvation with fear and trembling. If it's wrong for them, that's on them. Oh, that was some good preaching. Come on now. But what I like about this, for this content, what's this got to do with meditation? Well, let me show you this Joe Dispenza quote. and then I'll go back and refer to this. Dr. Dispenza says, meditating is also a means for you to move beyond your analytical mind so that you can access your subconscious mind. That's crucial since the subconscious is where all your bad habits and behaviors that you want to change reside. Now, you go back to what David said. He said, who can understand? He's basically saying, why do I have these triggers? Why do I do these things? Why do I respond in certain ways? Why do certain things make me go in an emotional direction? I'm not sure why it affects me this way. And I'll tell you, I'm not saying that meditation is a panacea for everything. I'm not promising you it'll fix all of your, it'll remove all the landmines in your subconscious. What I will tell you, I think that meditation does things that even therapy cannot do, because when you go to a therapist, and I'm nothing against therapy, nothing against life coaching, Doc's a life coach, I call myself one. Basically, I just meet you at Starbucks and talk a little bit. He's an actual bona fide, he's the real deal. And there's certainly a place for that. But then there's other things that just can't be, they can't be counseled about. They can't be, you know, well, they can't be completely counseled out of you. You have to, there's just some things that are so deeply embedded that you're just going to have to go asymmetrical and find another way to deal with them. I'm not saying not to go to therapist or to life coach or to come to me for counseling or whatever. I'm not saying counseling is bad. I'm saying it can't fix everything. What I've noticed in the meditation weekends is people will tell me, I don't know why, like, I started weeping and I don't know why. Like, why did I cry? Or why did I this or that or whatever? And it's because, ideally, meditation is to get you to a place where you're not thinking. And that's why I'm talking about healing the subconscious. The subconscious can't be counseled, really. Not completely. I was thinking about it this week. I was looking at a YouTube thing with Jimmy Carter, who somehow is still alive. What is he, 95? And he just survived brain cancer. I mean, brain cancer at 95. But I remember when he was elected in 1976, his sister, who has passed on now, but Ruth Carter Stapleton, she was sort of like the, not the mother of inner healing, but definitely the one that brought the concept of inner healing to the forefront. And because at the time he was the first candidate that identified as an evangelical Christian, which now I'm not even sure he identifies that way now, but at the time he did. And because of the spotlight on him, it brought the concept of inner healing to the forefront. I'm sure, Doc, you're probably aware of that back in the day. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. What inner healing was, it was a type of counseling where you would, I guess, visualize Jesus going with you through your childhood. Like you would go, like if you were sexually abused, the counselor would ask you to visualize the abuse and having Jesus there with you, and what is Jesus telling you, and now the downside to that is you think, oh my God, if I'm 5 years old, why didn't Jesus stop the abuser? You know what I mean? Because there were some people that say this has made it even worse, because I'm like, well, if there's a God, why did God let this happen to me? So it wasn't 100% effective. What was good about it, and I dabbled in it a little bit. If people wanted to do it, you probably did. When people wanted to go through inner healing, I would say, all right, well, you know, I understood the mechanics enough that I could, well, let's go through visualizing the thing. And I think for me, what's actually more effective is to go back to a painful memory and visualize my adult self talking to that person. Like, what would the adult you tell that 12-year-old you or whatever? That for me is more effective. Nothing against Jesus, but I do like the idea of thinking, what would the me now say to the 12-year-old who thought something was wrong with him? This version of me could say, no, buddy, you're fine. You're going to go through some crap the next few years, but it's going to all end up okay, and it actually does get better and all that kind of stuff. So just like you were saying about you can't lose with the stuff I use, you have whatever works for you. When people say, do you believe in AA? For some people, yeah. For some people, can't live without it. There's other people, they go to AA and it does not work for them. They don't have the personality type. I'm neither for nor against it. I'm like, look, if that's what you need, especially if it's going to keep you from drinking or ruining your life, then by all means, go to a meeting. But even at that, don't go expecting everything to be fixed. The only place where everything is going to be fixed is at Metron. I was just saying, this is the end of the rainbow. You can waste your time kissing all those frogs out there, but here's Prince Charming. No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't. Even with what I teach, there are certain things, if you don't believe it for yourself, it's still not going to work for you. I can't tell you the people over the years, Robert, you may have had this too, people would say, when I hear you preach, it's not that I disagree with what you're saying, I just don't think it's applicable to me. When you're talking about having everybody say, I'm the righteousness of God in Christ, I don't disagree with the theology of it, I just don't feel righteous. And so it makes, over the years, it made me want to stop speaking in platitudes and just become more real about, well, what is it that you're feeling lousy about? Well, I feel bad because I've been married 5 times. Well, that's a valid thing to feel like there may be some reason why I've had so many failed marriages. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means that, yeah, you may need to look at that. Why have you had so many challenges in relationship? To be able to look at that without the pointing of the finger. Which really is what Jesus did with the woman at the well. Remember when he said, you know, she says, give me this water. He says, go call your husband. She says, I don't have one. He says, well, you've well said. You've had 5 husbands and the man you're living with now is not your husband. And then he, in virtually the next breath says, the Father is looking for people like you. What, people that have been married many times? No, people who tell the truth, who embrace their truth. She wasn't defending it or whatever. She's like, I've been married 5 times. A lot of people don't want to tell that. And that's the context in which he said, God is a spirit and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. I'm telling you, I don't have an axe to grind with organized religion, but most of it is neither spirit nor truth. I mean, most of church is a huge masquerade party where people put on an image of religiosity and go act a certain way. Even one day this week, I was coming out of the grocery store and I noticed these women had a buggy, and I could tell they were Pentecostal because the way the women had skirts and really, really long hair. And I was thinking, you know, because I was Pentecostal, but my brand of Pentecostalism didn't look exactly like that. And what made me think is, it's so funny how people interpreted what was important to God. Do you know what I mean? Like, why did that group think hair had to be here? Like, it had nothing to do with God. I've told you this before. If you look back in the old Dottie Rambo albums from the 60s, she has that hair that, actually, Amy Winehouse used to wear her hair like this, but she'd pile it up on top of her head and it would come down on the side. And the reason they did that is because in the UPC, there were different parts of the country that taught women had to have hair piled up or other groups, women. And so she actually created the hairdo so that they could go to all the churches. I remember, y'all remember Chuck Longino? I'm still in touch with him, but he went to preach at a Pentecostal church there in Conyers where they made him take his belt off because it had a buckle on it, and they said that was unnecessary jewelry, and there was a buckle on his shoes. He had to preach without a belt or shoes on or a watch or a ring because they said that's jewelry and the Bible speaks against it. And that's not even the verse of Scripture they're talking about. All Paul is saying is be more concerned with the internal than the external. That's all he's saying. He's not saying anything about wearing jewelry or whatever. But I was looking at those women and I thought, that's so interesting. How does a group get to a place where one person says this is what God wants and then comes back later and says God changed his mind? Because that used to happen all the time in the Pentecostal churches. They would decide, well, now it's okay, now God changed his mind. It's like, well, God's keeping up with the times. And really, that's what's happening now. More and more I keep seeing even mainline ministers say, you know what? We're going to have to accept gay people as they are, and just and there's other people who are saying, oh no, that's terrible. You know, you're going to hell in a handbasket. But that's what happened a few years ago with divorced people, because you know, divorced people couldn't come to church, and after a while, there was nobody in church. The majority of the population has been divorced. Like, and you know, at a certain point, you know, say, God, you're going to have to lighten up on that rule, because there's just nobody to choose from anymore. And anyway, I'm saying more than I meant to say, but let me get through this so we can get into meditation. This Joseph Murphy quote, the rest of these are all quotes I want to share. He says, you must make certain to give your subconscious only suggestions which heal, bless, elevate, and inspire you in all your ways. Remember that your subconscious mind cannot take a joke. It takes you at your word. This is why I'm not, I don't want to become the word Nazi and make people, you know, afraid to say certain things around me, but I hold myself to a particular standard, not in a legalistic way, but there are certain things that even now that I'll say, and I think, you know what, I don't like the energy on that. Let me take that back. That didn't feel right. Like what you did. You said, I hope we're going to have, and then you said, no, I know we're going to, I know exactly what you mean. You're not getting down on yourself. You're saying, I don't want to leave that out there as is. Let me tweak that and take that to the next thing. Now, I'm not going to tell you to do that. You do what works for you. But I tell you, the more you opt out of negative speech and you hear other people do it, it's like hearing somebody scratch on a blackboard. You're like, oh my God, please don't say that, or don't say that over your children, or don't. And you know, there's no point in rebuking them, because it only makes people double down and resent you. So you have to let people say their crap. But you're just like, oh Lord, I'm not telling you what to do, but can you just listen to this? You know, and even be careful with that, because if somebody's not ready, I mean, there's a reason why the Buddha said, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. And if the student's not ready, all you're going to do is make the student more mad, madder. I mean, more mad, madder. Anyway, but I like this. Louise Hay, the great Louise Hay, said, "Go ahead. In order to reprogram the subconscious mind, you need to relax the body. That's one reason I like to take you to the beach, because there's so." You can relax by a lake, you can relax in the mountains, and we've done both, but there is something about the energy of the beach. I think there's something about the surf. It's so much bigger than you. It forces you to get outside of the parameters of your physicality. It does. You know what I mean? It's like, even this last time when we were in St. Simon's, we sat up there for the morning one, and where I had my chair facing your chairs. And you know, the tide was coming in so fast, and I moved my chair like four times. And finally, I said, all right, I get it. The tide is coming in. Because at a certain point, it just comes in. And what it said to me is, wow, you better keep your physicality in perspective. Because this ocean is big, and it was big before you walked this earth, and it's going to, after you go, it's still going to be, I mean, it's, every time I ever go to the beach, first thing I do, even if we get somewhere at night, we check into the hotel, and then I walk out there and I want to put my feet in it. And I'm just always amazed. I'm like, oh my God, it's still doing it. It never goes off. It goes out, it comes back in. It goes out, it comes back in. I've never gotten over it. It's just amazing to me. And I like this idea of relaxing the body, which is, this sentence here is really the main thing I'm teaching about this month. It release the tension, let emotions go, get to a state of openness and receptivity. You are always in change. You are always safe. And again, that's what I like about beach meditations, is there's a sense of, I can lay back on this sand. I can relax. I can sit on the sand. It's much more disarming than you realize. I mean, if you can go sit on the beach and still be uptight, you need to take something. You know what I mean? If the beach doesn't bring your stress level down a little bit, you're way too stressed. Because there's something, and if that doesn't work, order a drink and sit on the beach. You're not driving. You know what I mean? If If that doesn't work, you need inner healing. Jesus is taking you to the beach. What is he saying to you? Relax. You know what? I read so much into words, but you know the story of Mary and Martha. You know where they're at the house. I've shared this with you before, but when Martha comes to Jesus and he says, "Mary's not helping me in the kitchen." It's just the way Jesus says her name twice, Martha, Martha. There's so much sarcasm in that. You are troubled about many things. It's close to Marsha, Marsha, Marsha from Brady Bunch. But it's, you know, I've actually said it to myself before. Like, I broke the screen to my phone, had to get it fixed. It was too complicated to go through the insurance or whatever. It was so messed up, I couldn't see anything. And my phone is really my office. So I thought, fine, Apple, it's crazy what they charge you. I thought, shoot, I could just buy a new phone for what I'm paying for this. But then I found out to turn in my other phone, you still have to repair the thing. I thought, fine, just fix it. It's fine. So then I bought one of those for another $40 on top of what I already paid, a screensaver thing. And yesterday, just getting in the car, I just dropped it a little bit in my car and it broke again. And I was like freaking out. I was freaking out. And I actually had to say to myself, Jimmy, 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 you're going to have to get this in perspective. But you know how when you've just spent a lot of money and you break it again, I'm like, I'm going to get one of those rubber things. Because I'm not carrying it right now, but if I don't have a microphone in my hand, I'm carrying my phone all the time. It's very likely that I'm going to drop it. I need something that's going to make it bounce back up. Like a Super Bowl. But I literally just had to, you know, he didn't seem to be concerned about it. I'm like, this just made me physically nauseous. And he finally said, okay, I'm really sorry, bro. Now that's what you say. I mean, you weren't being insensitive, but it was like, I was totally overreacted to it. I was like, all right, it's a screen. What? You can say your part. Yes, it wasn't. I didn't actually break the glass. I just broke the lens thing. But even that was, I hadn't had it a full 24 hours. And it was that was an extra $40 on top of what I had just spent on the screen. So yes, you're right. But my point is, after we'd had this really nice, relaxing day, I was just like, this is like the worst thing that's ever happened. Because I was being so careful. No, the phone didn't break. Yes. Are you through? Anyway, the point is there are aggravations that need to be acknowledged, but also put in perspective. Like, really? I've had this great day. This extra $40 is going to mess up my day that much? I think if it had been a full 48 hours, I wouldn't have been so upset about it. But yes, your point is well taken. And that's part of what I said to myself. It's like, the phone still works. It's fine. I need to go get the thing. What did you call it? The thing I had before. I need that. Because when I had that before, this never happened. And since when we were in St. Simon's, I went and got this. It's cool. It looks really cool, but it makes the thing so delicate. Yeah, it's plastic. So anyway, lesson learned. But you have to learn self-talk to say, wait a minute, why am I getting stressed out about this? And then it goes back to, why did this trigger me so much? You know what I mean? Not to get down on yourself, but why would that upset me that much? And this is where I'm want to take us this month in meditation. Let me finish this up and we'll do it. Bruce Lipton, if you've ever read after him, he's a doctor. You've read a lot of his stuff. He really teaches about changing your DNA and a lot of things that it's a little above my pay grade. You know, like I don't know epigenetics and that kind of stuff, but it's fascinating. The part of it I understand. But he says, if we could get your subconscious mind to agree with your conscious mind about being happy, that's when your positive thoughts work. Which really, you know, when James says a double-minded man's unstable in all of his ways, I really think that's what that means, is when your conscious is saying one thing and your subconscious is saying something different. And this is why, you know, whereas in Jeremiah it says you've healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying peace, peace, where there is no peace. He's talking about ministering to people superficially and not really dealing with what's really affecting people. And, you know, you can become so introspective that it becomes counterproductive. You can't just overanalyze everything. But if there are certain people who make you feel a certain way or certain words that make you feel a certain way, you have to ask yourself what David asked. Who can understand his errors? Why is this important to me? Why did I need approval that much? Why did that person mess with me? You know what I mean? You nearly have to go through it sometimes. Like I got a really negative message a couple of weeks ago. It was really out of character. I don't really get them anymore. And I nearly was glad that it happened because it was a touchstone for me to see how far I've come. Because I read it and, you know, Ken said, well, you should write him back. I said, no, there's no point. It's not going to, that's what this person thinks about people like me. And it's just going to waste too much time to say that. What I'm happy about is that I can read it and just say, you know, which there was a time it would have come up in every conversation I had that day. Let me tell you this. You are not going to believe this thing that this person wrote. And I was just like, I nearly felt compassion for him. Like, wow, that's where you're at? That's what you think reality is? And I was, in a weird way, grateful that I had the chance to experiment with it. Like, wow, I've really come a long way. And I think a lot of that is because of meditation. All right. I think this is a meme I want to show you. I've shared this before, but I love it. Every cell in your body is eavesdropping on your thoughts. And I would also say every cell in your body is eavesdropping on your words. But the thoughts that you think are just affecting your every system in your body. You need to understand ingratitude is bad for your health. Fear is bad for your health. Worry is bad for your health. You know, we've been so concerned about it, the spirituality of it. No, it physically affects you. I mean, I've visited people in the hospital that I know worried themselves to death or grieved themselves to death or died of a broken heart. I've seen it over and over and over again. And you're right. All the prayer in the world isn't going to fix that. That's why when I go visit somebody that's terminal, even, you know, last Sunday, I left here and went to visit Mario. I had a very emotional visit with him. He didn't even, he really didn't recognize me. I mean, it affected me emotionally enough that Betty was comforting me, and I was like, no, I'm supposed to be. But then that night after we left, we went to my parents, and she texted me, and she said, we're having to take him to the emergency room, and they're saying to notify family, which she may not even want this out there, but I've already said it. So I said, do you need me to come back to the hospital? No, I just wanted you to know. Okay. Well, as of today, he's still alive. I mean, I texted her yesterday. I said, what's going on? They're giving him a lot of fluids and whatever. And I said to him in his state, I said, Mario, you're a fighter. And I said, this is what I want to believe for. If you want to fight, I said this to him in his state, then we're pulling for you. We want you to, I mean, he's 83, but he's a young 83. And I said, and if you're tired and want to go to the other side, we allow you for that as well. I think that's such a realistic way to pray. Instead of putting your mojo on people, you know, to say, some people just need to let them go. And other people, you need to fight with them. And you have to locate what do they want. Because sometimes you can pray in selfishness. You know, no, I need them to stay. Well, maybe you need to locate what do they want. But I can tell you, all the prayer in the world isn't going to change somebody's subconscious. And that's where prayer is not a negative thing. It's just, it's a limited thing. And I love the old adage, don't Pray that God changes things. Pray that God changes you and you change things. Okay, now that I can get my head around. That seems legit. And then finally, we'll enter this. Matthew 5:8. This is in the Message. We're in the King James. It says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Here it says, "You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart put right. Then you can see God in the outside world." The reason people have such a distorted view of God is they're seeing God through the impurities of their own subconscious. That's why, I mean, we said the Lord's Prayer today that says, "Our Father," but I can tell you, for some people, the word "Father" is not a good trigger word. Some people had terrible relationships with fathers. So for them to know that there's a heavenly parent who's not necessarily paternal or masculine may be more effective for them. You know, some people say, "But God's my daddy, and I just want to crawl up on his lap." Well, some people never had that with a daddy. They're like, "Well, let's not talk about it. You know, my daddy wasn't, I never knew who he was." Or, you know, that may not be a positive thing for them. So the more you remove the impurities in your subconscious, really you could say it this way: the more you see yourself, the more you see God. The more you see God, the more you see yourself. The more you see who God really is, the more you see who you really are. The more you see who you really are, the more you see who God really is. You know? Because all of these presupposed ideas, I mean, think about this. Now, move to the next phase. Jesus goes and chooses these 12 disciples who all have issues. And he doesn't try to change them. And most of them don't seem to have changed all that much. I mean, he seems to have just, you know, one of the last things we see Peter's still cussing and cutting people's ears. He didn't seem all that evolved. You know what I mean? And the point is, God just loves you like you are. Not only loves you like you are, he made you like you are. And furthermore, I think the thing that you think is wrong with you is the thing that's actually right with you. You just have to learn how to manage it. Like there are people who are pathological liars who really shouldn't be liars. They just have the ability to see the invisible and call those things which are not as though they are. They just need to tweak it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? It's like that. And what happens is, if you keep thinking it's a sin, it collapses out of the quantum field into sin consciousness, and now you're just, "I'm a terrible liar." No, you're a visionary. You just need to learn how to, you know, not make it work against you, make it work for you. Because calling those things which are not as though they are and lying feel very similar. You see somebody that's super whiny and whatever, maybe they're not really whiny. Maybe they're just really compassionate. And they just need to learn how to channel the compassion in a proactive way instead of just crying about everything. Go do something about it. Like, you know, minister out of your own wounds. I think that... What is that funny? But don't you think... I think that's what Jesus was doing in the choosing of the disciples is, like, Simon the Zealot was like a terrorist. He followed Jesus because he believed that they could physically overthrow the Roman government. He was like out of the ISIS or the Taliban or whatever. And Jesus chose him just like it was because he loved his passion. Maybe somebody's got a hot temper. Maybe they're just really passionate. And you just need to learn how to channel it correctly. Maybe all the stuff that you thought was wrong with you is totally right with you. I've told you this before, I'm going to tell you one more time, and I promise I will shut up. If I don't shut up after this, cut my mic off and start the music. I give you permission, but only this once. But I was having dinner in Chicago with a bishop who is not gay, but he's not a gay church, but his church had changed their policy recently about becoming affirming. And he said, "Can I just ask you some things?" He said, "Please don't be upset. Some of the stuff I'm going to ask you." Fine. And some of the stuff he was asking was like, "You can't, seriously, you're really asking me that?" But okay. Because I could tell his heart was in the right place. But he said this, he said, "You know," He said, I never thought anybody was born gay until I met you. He said, I not only think that you were, I think you had to have been, because the way your mind works, if you hadn't had that issue to deal with, he said, I don't think you would have ever challenged religion the way that you have. He said, I've read some of your books in the past. He said, I think that came out of your mindset because you just were not going to accept the fact that, oh, this is the way I am and God's going to send me to hell. And, you know, that could not have been true. And I said, that's one of the most profound things anybody's ever said. That was worth me flying to Chicago for. Thank you for saying that. Because this, he was saying it with no agenda. He was just like, meeting you has changed my perception of men like you. And made me change my stereotypes of what I thought. I was listening to Mayor Pete on the interview yesterday. I can't imagine he would be elected. I don't see that. But if nothing else, he's changed people's perception of what a gay man is. It's like, thank you for just showing another face. Nothing against all the other typical stuff that you see on TV. I mean, that is a part of it. But it's just nice to see this side of it too. And, you know, on behalf of the gay community, thank you. Thank you for being smart and intelligent. And he's got some issues with the black community. He's got to figure that out. But, there's a lot of work in a diverse world that has to be done. But the point is you see God when you realize what you thought was wrong with you is actually what's right with you. All right. Now, did you get anything out of this today? All right. We're going to be meditating all month, so we'll probably only do about a 10-minute one. But let's just bring the lights down. If you've never done this before, feel free to participate with us. You don't have to, but I'd love for you to. As Charles starts the music, if you'll sit up straight, put both feet on the floor, empty your lap. You don't have to do a mudra, but if you just put your hands in a way that makes you feel receptive, what you want to do is get the energy flow unobstructed, so your posture is important. You don't have to close your eyes, but you may want to. Meditation is largely about breathing, so we're going to start by inhaling through the nose and holding it, and then exhaling through the mouth. So let's inhale, hold it, exhale. Do is just become conscious of your breathing. Breathe in a consistent way. You can bring the music up just a tiny little bit. Just a little bit. That's good right there. There's so much agreement in this place. Most of you can get there in a few breaths. Most of you are probably already entering in, but let's just breathe. Thinking anything, and I'll wean you off my voice. We're gonna care to your subconscious and let it heal itself. Open up your subconscious mind for healing. Healing of memories. beautiful. I was trying to get a picture of this. Ken said he took a picture the other day, and for some reason it didn't work out, but he said the smoke had completely encircled me. He said it would have been such a cool, I guess it was, you had to have been there. Oh, that was good. This is going to be a good month. Don't overthink whatever just happened. We're going to a place of healing our subconscious. Next week, I'll talk less and we'll meditate more, but I wanted to get this foundation set up. Robert, thanks for being here. Dawn, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for everybody being here. That was good today, wasn't it? Please remain standing. We'll play this for the YouTube audience, and then I'll speak a blessing over you.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You can give anytime using any smartphone. Text the amount you'd like to donate to 404-620-5044.
Easy peasy.
You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation. You may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well. When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
If you have a check, make it to JESM, and Danny will receive that. If you have cash, just pay it forward, pass it on. You might want to, if you have cash, give it to Robert. Robert drove all the way in from Eatonton today, and he's probably not going to be paid for this funeral today. So, I would be pleasantly surprised if you are. All things are possible. But if you want to bless him or intend it toward the Chapel of Love, it's great. Didn't that frankincense smell good? I love it. There's something so wonderful about incense. Michelle, keep that Lord's Prayer handy, because I want to use that again. So I'll open up with that again. You're gonna have a beautiful day. Good night's rest tonight. Good things are happening in your life. You're gonna be very productive this week. You're beautiful. You're smart. You're intelligent. You're attractive, you're safe, you're successful, you're holy, you're beautiful just like you are. All you need to work on, if anything, is to become the best version of who you already are. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad. God bless you. Go in peace. I love you.